This is episode 384 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, May the 14th, 2012.
The copyright proprietor has licensed this podcast for private home use only. The definition of home use excludes clubs, coaches, hospitals, hotels, oil rigs.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation since 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. On the show today, it seems like we're heading down the path of copyright and piracy. Just this week, Optus chose to appeal the TV Now ruling to the High Court, which resulted in a blast from AFL chief Andrew Demetriou, describing the situation as stupid, disgusting, and disappointing. Adam Turner has news on a new initiative from the United States to combat piracy. Google has their new driverless car, and rumour has it that there's a new colour Kindle on the way. As well, there's new OLED TVs from Samsung set to hit the market later this year. We have the latest on Apple and Sony's financial status. And on a lighter note, Wolfenstein 3D is to be free on the iPhone, iPad and web. As well, Rovio confirms that there's life after Angry Birds. Don't forget, there's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. But first up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Optus to appeal the federal court's TV Now decision. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak criticises cost discrepancies between Australian and US markets. Facebook encourages organ donation in Australia, and a delicate operation is tweeted live by neurosurgeons. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Optus says it will seek leave to appeal a decision made against it in the federal court, which has put a stop to its controversial TV Now service. The TV Now online television recording service drew the ire of Telstra, as well as the AFL and NRL, over concerns that customers could virtually live stream football and effectively erode sponsorship rights. When an original decision was made in Optus's favour, an appeal by the Telstra AFL-NRL consortium was upheld in the federal court 2 weeks ago. Optus last week announced it will take the TV Now case to Australia's High Court. Optus's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Paul O'Sullivan, released a statement which said, "We believe the TV Now case is extremely important in deciding the future for innovation, consumer choice and competition." Mr. O'Sullivan went on to say, "This is a very important public policy issue that needs to be determined by the highest court in the land to give clarity to both consumers and the industry." Chief Executive Officer of the AFL, Mr. Andrew Demetriou, responded by calling Optus a disgusting organisation and said they continued to act reprehensibly and were now putting more uncertainty into sports and broadcast rights. Mr. Demetriou said he hoped Optus was unsuccessful in seeking leave to appeal. Apple co-founder Mr. Steve Wozniak has criticised the online music and games market, saying that there's no good reason why Australians are forced to pay more for products than in the United States. Digital downloads are consistently more expensive in Australian online markets, sometimes nearly double the price for the same product being offered elsewhere. Here's Mr. Wozniak on the ABC's PM program last week.
We shouldn't have boundaries between countries. Why is it so difficult to just, you know, even travel certain places and some you need extensive visas. I hate all those interruptions and the large duties in Australia. I'm sure I would not favor. Obviously, you can ship anything anywhere in the world for almost nothing nowadays.
Communications Minister Senator Stephen Conroy recently announced a federal parliamentary inquiry into why Australians pay more for online music and games than overseas customers. The government hopes that publicity generated by the inquiry will challenge companies like Microsoft, Adobe, and Apple to lower their prices in Australian markets. In an effort to raise awareness of the importance of organ donation, the social network Facebook has created a tool which lets users show their support and register with the Australian Organ and Tissue Authority. Facebook co-founder Mr. Mark Zuckerberg says it's a simple but effective idea.
Could we do anything that would help people solve other types of issues, like all of the people who need organ donations in the world? And we came up with this pretty simple thing, which we're hopeful can help out.
Ms. Yael Cass is the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Organ and Tissue Authority. She spoke on ABC Radio last week and welcomed the introduction of the new tool on Facebook.
We have about 6 million Australians on the Australian Organ Donor Register now. That's just over 30% of the adult population. We need more people who've made a decision, told their families, and have indicated that they're prepared to be organ and tissue donors if the situation arises.
Ms. Cass said that Australian users would soon be able to indicate their decision to become an organ and tissue donor, add this to their Facebook profile, and send status updates to Facebook friends. In other news for the social network, The Age Tech revealed last week that Facebook is considering charging its users approximately $2 to highlight important posts and increase posts' visibility. Facebook confirmed the feature was being offered as a trial to a select group of users. The news comes as the company prepares for public listing, which is expected to value Facebook at about $90 billion. And not for the squeamish, in what's thought to be a world first for social networking and microblogging, a surgeon at Houston's Memorial Hermann Hospital last week had every detailed move of a brain tumour resection tweeted live by hospital staff. Social media blog Mashable said the tweets were accompanied with graphic photos and video clips posted to Twitter and YouTube. Dr. Kim Dong said he removed a tumour from beneath a 21-year-old woman's brain, guided by fibre optic camera, which was relayed to the internet. A brain tumour specialist answered questions from Twitter during the operation. Dr. Kim told Mashable last week that people want to know what goes on in brain surgery like this. In February, the hospital performed the world's first ever live-tweeted open-heart surgery. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
If you can't beat them, join them. I reckon the attitude is towards Telstra, wouldn't you think?
Have you seen the adventures yet?
It's not quite the way I would have chosen to do it.
That was straight into it.
But we're looking at reforms to the Copyright Act.
Mystery solved.
Okay.
Mystery solved.
But let me throw this into the mix too.
If I may interject.
Yeah, interject by all means.
So the phone is watching you.
Yes. But having said that, I haven't found one that's really easy to use, if you know what I mean.
There's no rule that says you only have to use one backup solution.
And Trojans aren't viruses.
Traditionally have... All right.
Thank you, Lena. Yes,
thank you.
You can have as much Adam as you can take.
Aww.
You
know? Oh, great.
Aww.
There's the quality control. So there's the serenity.
Well, no, I won't now because you've made mention of it. Thanks, Andrew.
Cats out of the bag.
I consider myself chastised.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Hello. Hope you had a good week. Dr. Ron.
Hello. How are you going?
Oh, you are going to talk. I thought you were sitting there.
We're still adjusting things. We're still plugging stuff in and flicking switches and turning knobs. So it's what we do, though.
Yeah, it is indeed.
At this stage of the program.
It is. Anyway, hey, it's IPO week. It's IPO week.
You're going to buy shares?
No.
Explain yourself.
Well, the initial public offer is coming out for Facebook.
It is.
Yeah.
And you're not going to buy shares?
No, I'm not registered on the US market, I'm afraid. Are you?
I'm not. I'm not registered on the US market. I'm not going to buy shares either. People are still trying to work out how it's going to make money. There's the advertisements that appear on the side of the screen when you're logged into Facebook.
Yeah.
But people want to know, is that enough? How do you actually make money if you don't have the advertisements there, if the advertisements aren't enough?
Yeah. We don't know, do we?
Do not know.
Oh, well. It was interesting. Doco, I think, on ABC television during the course of the week too, which was about Mark Zuckerberg and his Facebook.
I caught up with it on iView. It was made by the BBC. Did you just say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, BBC.
Interesting. Timely, wasn't it?
Yeah, very timely.
Anyway, we'll soon see what it's worth. And you were saying in the news about 90 bill. Is that right?
I think 90 billion they're hoping for.
Yeah, that's not bad. Wonder if it'll be oversubscribed. Too many people want in.
What has to be sustainable,
yeah,
isn't it?
Anyway, Lena Van Deventer.
Hello.
Stop playing with your microphone and making bumpy noises.
It's not where I want it to be, though.
Oh, hang on. Do you want me to pull your fader up? Quick, adjust it now. Adjust it now. Are you right? Okay, push your fader up. Here you go.
See? Seamless.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They'll never know at home.
Except that we talked them through it.
Yeah.
Imagine if we did this live.
I know.
Did you bring a note from last week?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, my son was both sick and having a birthday. So I originally took last week off because it was his birthday, and it turned out that I was glad I did
for other reasons.
It wasn't pretty. Yeah.
Kids are great like that, aren't they? Yeah. Anyway, well, we missed you last week, so hopefully we've got a big double whammy this week of news, because they've already started in the chat about your news tonight, so we won't steal their thunder.
No.
Lots of gaming news.
Lots.
Even this week, there's some new games coming. Well, old games coming out again.
Yes.
I liked the sound of those. Yep. We cheated and tweeted them and stuff like that. So anyway, we have some other big news in relation to other things that we've been doing sort of around Tech Talk Radio, which we might allude to later this evening, if you're all good. Might we, Dr. Ron?
Oh.
We might. We need to speak about
big
this.
Big announcement.
We haven't spoken about this off-air properly.
No, we haven't. We'll do it during the break then. Then we'll work it out.
We'll need to.
So you'll have to listen live. We're only going to give you information on the radio. Nowhere else.
Can you turn the faders up when they think they're not on the air so that they are on the air? That'd be great.
Graham Callaghan, good evening.
I can't do anything because it's a long way to my microphone.
Yeah, it is.
Hello. Dear.
Yes. Anyway,
that's better.
Let's get the game rolling, shall we, Dr. Ron? And we'll kick off with a bit of this.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. That's how to communicate with the panel. And if you're listening live, come to the chat room, which is at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Longtime friend of Tech Talk Radio, Andy B.
G'day, Andy.
Says via the feedback address, this might be worth a read and a mention. He's put a link there to a blog post on his blog. His blog is blog.andyblu.me. Until I read the original UK article, says Andy, I had no idea this could be easily circumvented. It's a post on how to stop thieves from disabling your location services in your smartphone. I can't listen live due to work, says Andy, but look forward to the podcast. Cheers. So if you're interested in location services and, unfortunately, how easy location services are to disable in a phone, have a look at Andy's blog post. It's quite interesting. He's got some other good articles there too on his blog. Wei Yin, also via the feedback address, says, hi, guys. Hi, Wei Yin. Watching the other films, Captain America, Thor.
Oh, we were talking about this last week, weren't we?
We were. Iron Man 1 and 2.
I wasn't here for it.
I want to hear that message. I just wanted to mention Andy's blog.
Rewind. Back to Andy.
I haven't read it, but with a bit of a mind as to Andy's character, I'm just wondering if we should warn that. Is that blog maybe NSFW?
No, jump on in.
Oh, okay, good. Excellent. Moving along. Sorry,
I don't know what that was all about, but anyway, moving along.
Graham's just catching up. Okay. Yeah. Hi, guys, says Wei Yin.
He's
watching
getting the water off his glasses.
Yeah.
It's raining.
This will be great to edit. This will be really good. Watching the other films, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man 1 and 2, before watching The Adventures, we'll give you some back. No one's going to bite.
The Adventures?
I thought someone might. Do you know why people are calling it The Adventures?
Why?
Because Joss Whedon tweeted a couple of weeks ago, hey,
my
mum just called my new movie The Adventures. Yeah. What the?
Love it.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Before watching The Avengers, they'll give you some background on the film, really lets you geek out if you are watching it with other people. As a standalone film, it's really entertaining. If you don't think too hard about it, definitely worth it if you enjoy a popcorn flick. Cheers, Wei Yin.
I agree.
Graham, you saw the Avengers.
Did you?
I did.
Yay!
I enjoyed it very much, actually. I was very, very pleased that I went. I have absolutely zero comic book knowledge. I have absolutely zero knowledge of any of those other movies. I haven't gone to see them for the reason that I'm not a comic book geek. Mm-hmm. But it did. I know you are. And so are many of our listeners, I'm aware. So, I was very aware that there were things that went over my head, but there was plenty there to keep me entertained and some really great laugh out loud moments. Look, the decision process was Joss Whedon did this, mm-hmm. can't miss it. And Lena told me to.
Yay!
there was definitely no option of not going, so I'm very pleased I saw it.
Lena, you've seen The Avengers?
I have.
Enjoyed it?
Loved it.
Oh, good.
Loved every minute. People were cheering and clapping and yelling out in the cinema. It was wonderful atmosphere. It was fantastic.
I'm going to watch Captain America because I haven't seen that, and then I'm going to go and see The Avengers.
Excellent.
I'm somewhat keen now to get a chance to view some of the others that might be out on DVD and so on.
You should, because Hulk is done right in The Avengers, and there's been two Hulk movies, and it's finally done right in The Avengers.
Oh, okay, so I shouldn't bother with the ones that are done wrong.
No, you should, just to see how they're not as good.
Wait till you hear today's odd spot, but that's all I'll say. Ooh. If you're a movie buff and The Avengers buff.
It's a great odd spot.
It is.
Excellent.
GJ, via the contact form, says, "Hi, GJ, I've seen in Sunday's Age and the ABC last week," he's popped a link there, which I'll put in the show notes, "that the movie Iron Sky, a new science fiction comedy filmed on the Gold Coast in Queensland, has been released in Australia, and that it mentions helium-3, the possible safe nuclear solution that I heard about in an In Our Time podcast talking about the moon." Do you know about Iron Sky, the new sci-fi movie? It's funny, it's about...
Since when have you become a film show?
This has always been a film show. Who are you kidding? It's about Nazis that invade Earth from the other side of the moon, and invade planet Earth.
Ah.
It's really good.
Cool.
A few people know this, but there is a quiet space race going on out there, says GJ. I reckon this is what those billionaire asteroid miners are really working towards ever since James Cameron hit rock bottom, Mariana's Trench, and came back absolutely glowing with French, UK, Russian waste. He proved privates can be done, and so they will. He's got some more comments there, which will pop in next week. Cheers, GJ. Thanks, GJ. I'm powering through it this week because there's so much correspondence. It's great. Carl via the contact form says, "Hi, team."
Hi, Carl.
Great topic. On backing up last show, something most of us know we should do but often
don't.
Neglect.
So true.
If your biggest concern is photographs, I have a tip on backing up all your images if you use a Mac, and it's not quite so obvious as to how to copy photos to an external drive from within Apple's default photo manager, iPhoto. With your backup drive attached, you need to navigate your way to the pictures folder on your internal drive. You can't just open iPhoto. Lena's nodding sagely.
Well, you can, but it'll just copy them instead of moving the originals.
Ah.
If you want to move the originals, which I don't ever do because I like them to stay in one spot forever and ever and ever, then, yeah, you have to go into it and find the package contents.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
He says, select show package contents and you'll find a folder marked masters that Apple usually keeps hidden. Mm-hmm. This contains all your original images. You can now simply drag and drop. Rah, 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 rah.
Why do they hide them?
They don't hide them. They make it so that the masters are always in one spot so that then files located in other places, if you move a photo from one program to another, that master's not being moved around. It's a copy that's being moved around so that then...
A safeguard.
Yeah. So then you've always got, in iPhoto, you've always got all your photos in there and you don't have it all fragmented all over the place and have photos sort of lost all over the whole machine.
Nice. It sounds like a lot of sense too.
Logical.
So that if you... In a picture view and you do a quick rotate and a crop and so on, you're not affecting your master either, I would
yes.
assume.
Yep, yep. Which is actually really good if you edit and make a mistake. Like I do a lot. I make lots of mistakes.
Now, I also have to take Graham to task.
Ooh,
when
here we
he
go.
Used film days as an analogy for not keeping everything you shoot and suggesting you don't keep raw files once you've done your editing and saving as JPEGs. As a photographer, I'd say RAW files are the equivalent today of negatives, in the sense that you can go back repeatedly to a RAW, like a film negative, for perfect copies or to create different versions of prints.
Absolutely true. Spot on, yes.
Or to treat them as masters.
Do you want to explain to those who have no idea what you're talking about the difference between a RAW file and a JPEG?
A RAW file is a very, very large file, and it's all of the image information that the camera stores and writes if you shoot in RAW mode, if you take photos in RAW mode. JPEGs are compressed files, and they're much smaller, but you can do a lot more with RAW.
Mm. Yeah, the compression in the JPEG makes the file a huge amount smaller, like one or two orders of magnitude smaller, but you do lose quality, but it's done in such a way that you generally don't notice the loss in quality if you're just viewing a photograph. But if you're going back and editing and making changes, you want to brighten it up, you want to make it darker, stuff like that, then that information that's lost in compressing it is lost for good. So you never get as good a result. But by going back to the RAW file, which is uncompressed, then you've got all that information there. It's the the logical equivalent of the difference between a CD that's uncompressed and an MP3 that's compressed. The compression loses information.
I know RAW files take up a lot of hard drive space, says Carl, but most serious photographers would still keep their RAW files, again, unless the individual shots were clearly useless. As once the RAW is gone, your only option is to rework JPEGs.
Yes.
Regards, Carl.
And I agree. I was probably taking the point of view of someone who's not a professional photographer, someone who's...
going to print them out and not edit them.
Yeah, the same sort of people that would lose their negatives.
Yeah.
I mean, hands up who's got their negatives from their, you know, 35mm film camera from, you know...
Careful, you could show your age here. Warning.
I know that somewhere there are albums and albums full of my negatives when I was shooting black and white, when I was being serious about my photography, and I don't even know where they are, let alone where the colour negatives for my happy snaps are.
Rob, via the contact form, says, hey, team.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Rob. Just listening to the excellent discussion on backing up. Oh, we seem to have struck him forward there.
We have.
I myself use a mixture of external hard disks and drop boxes. Just wondering the panel's thoughts on imaging an entire drive with program settings, all files, etc. Well, Rob, you can.
Absolutely.
It's a matter of time. Time is
money, and where, isn't it? And where the destination.
No, but it's a good strategy. You get your system, for systems that don't change very often, that where you're not installing and uninstalling apps all the time, to take an image of the whole system that can be restored so that you can do what I would call a bare metal restore. So that if your hard drive fails, you restore the image, and then from other things like your external hard disks or the cloud or wherever it happens to be, you restore the latest data that fits in that image.
I think I do that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And there's good tools around to do it. The classic one is Ghost, which is now a Norton Symantec product.
I like Ghost.
Ghost is a good product, works really well, not free. It's a commercial product, you have to pay for it. If you want something that's free and, in fact, completely open source, so fairly trustworthy, have a look at CloneZilla.
Mm. I use Ghost to actually take a snapshot. If I've built an edit suite, for example, and all my edit suite has on is editing software and maybe some Photoshop stuff, I'd use that to take a snapshot of it. So if I do changes down the track and it all goes pear-shaped, I just restore up my...
Oh, absolutely. My in a commercial environment...
Very quick and easy to do.
In a business environment, for sure. Using Ghost is a great solution. You pay your license fee, but that gives you support. And that's the one thing that's the difference between the commercial software world and the open source world, is you've got commercial support. You've got someone you can go to and say, fix it if it doesn't work. Whereas with open source, you've got the community that you can go to say, please fix it if it doesn't work, but there's no one you can compel to fix it.
Dark Splat on the chat has said, on a Mac, there's something similar called Carbon Copy Cloner.
Mm. I suspect that, I haven't looked it up, I suspect that CloneZilla will do Mac drives as well. It certainly does Windows and Linux systems.
Open source generally are pretty good with being multi-platform, aren't they?
Yeah, and Macs these days are Unix boxes anyway, so, they're BSD boxes or something, so, yeah.
I use Time Machine to back up. I wasn't here last week, so I just thought I'd throw that in.
That's right.
Time Machine's what
Have most, you listened to the podcast?
What most no. Mac users will be using. That's right, isn't it? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
If you want to revisit what we were talking about, Adam's View from the Couch is online on his special page. Yeah. You can go there and
get
click
to
play.
From our website.
Yeah, and it's got all of the backup options there. But that was good.
Primal, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback address, says...
He's in the chat tonight, too.
He is.
Hi.
He's in light green, Primal.
Primal says, good day to you, Tech Talk team.
Good day, Primal.
Good day to you, sir.
He's red on mine.
Is he?
He's green on mine.
He's different on all the different... That's interesting. The colours are always different. There you go.
Some random feedback for you on recent comments and items from the show. I'm a bit of a headphone snob too, guys. I like Sennheiser.
There's two sitting on the table here.
There is.
In hermetically sealed containers.
They're for me.
Ready to draw blood.
How do you open those plastic containers without bleeding and ending up in the emergency department?
With either a sharp knife or a sharp pair of scissors or shears.
Again, how do you open those things without cutting yourself and ending up in an emergency department?
I've seen scissors sold in this wrapping.
Oh, that's a bit meta.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you... if you correctly use a sharp knife or a sharp pair of scissors, or you shouldn't have any troubles getting
it. They are diabolical to open.
For those of you wondering what we're talking about, you go into one of these shops and you buy these things, and these hermetically sealed plastic.
It might be like a hard disk or a pair of headphones, or could be anything.
You just sealed hard plastic.
Yeah, you just have to. It's like going to the blood bank. You donate a pint of blood on opening.
Absolutely not. You guys have to learn to use scissors.
Graham, we're going to watch you unwrap one of those at the end of the show, and we're going to tweet vid it, and people can watch you, and you can give us a demonstration.
Sorry, we're doing the Coro, Dr. Ron. We've been wilfully.
Most of us mastered the use of scissors in kindergarten.
Yep. That's what I said. We're going to video you doing it at the end of the program. We'll watch you give us an expert demonstration.
I use Control X these days.
To cut.
Yeah.
Cut. They're a bit more expensive than your run-of-the-mill Philips brand. He's talking about Sennheisers.
They are.
But they're a better quality build. You can certainly tell the difference in the sound, and you get your money's worth. Worth the investment, in my opinion. If people are looking for a good bargain pair, keep an eye on catchoftheday.com.au. Perhaps a suggestion for website of the week. Well, blown that now.
Good one, Ron.
Hang on, let me check the rundown.
A couple of weeks when people have forgotten.
good idea. As they often have $150 RRP pairs of Sennheiser headphones for about the $60 to $80 mark when they're end of life for that model. Cheers, Phil, a.k.a. Primal.
Thanks, Primal.
Nice. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Freak via the forum
says... You're down now, Primal.
My goodness.
Hey, guys. Just recently, I've been in the process of going to websites I'd signed up for many years ago and started deleting my profiles. However, there was one website which made it impossible for me to do this.
Facebook.
I could not even delete any photos from the site. I had to contact them, and they responded explaining it's not technically possible to be deleted and that what I should do is hide my profile. I was angry with their response, and I asked them what happens when the servers get choked up with too many profiles. After a while and spamming them with emails... They responded by telling me, please stop, we'll delete you. I've since found out...
That's the spirit.
Good work, freak.
Well done.
I've since found out the reason a lot of sites make it difficult is that their user base numbers look good to advertisers who pay big bucks.
Of course.
Based on the user base numbers, whether the user is using the service or not. Be wary of websites, says freak, such as fasterlouder.com.au, which is a music news website. These people do not allow you to delete your profile unless you go to extremes like I did. Sadly, most people don't go quite this far, but the more people who do, the easier websites will make it for us to come and go as we please.
And advertisers should be listening to this little segment as well. If you're involved in the advertising business on the web or advertising broking or whatever it might happen to be, think about making sure you ask for active users or users active in the last X weeks rather than just the total number of subscribed users, because that's going to be a better guide as to the visibility of your ads.
That's a good point.
And it'll also encourage the websites that your customers, or people that you hope will be your customers, it'll encourage those websites to be more responsible and more responsive.
Thanks, Tristan. TARDIS3 on the forum says...
How many?
All of them.
Yeah, lots.
I love how much Coro we got.
It's terrific. Yeah. Keep sending me
wonderful. Yeah. It's great. We try to get through as much of it as we can, and the people that have read out, yeah, you'll notice I've abridged a few because we just don't have all of the time in the world, unfortunately. TARDIS3 asks, when discussing carbonite, Graham suggested that...
Just backing up again.
Yep. Yeah. We should go to the local carbonite site, which is carbonite.com.au. I went there. I found the price to be $71.99 per annum. Then I went to the US site, and the price there is $59 per annum. Price gouging strikes again, asks TARDIS, or is there some reason for the price difference? Mr. Conroy's all over it, TARDIS.
The dollar's at parity at the moment, so you would think it'd be around the same.
There might be other factors, though. We might hope, and I don't know whether this is true, it'll be worth trying to find out, whether carbonite.com.au actually stores the data and uses local... file servers in local data centres, in Australian data centres, I mean.
So you might be paying a little bit more for presence.
Exactly right. And, of course, Australian data centres are likely to be a little bit more expensive in a smaller market for a bigger geographical area. So
good point. Possible explanation.
Yeah, and it might be worth paying the extra to have it local.
Mr. Hawks on the forum asks, a recent app of the week promoted Viber.
Yeah.
You use Viber.
I do. Don't
you? I've installed the app and found it works rather well. In fact, the number of my contacts that were Viber-enabled was rather impressive. I installed it for the primary purpose of trying to be even more cost-effective when it comes to voice calls. I do not have a capped plan, nor am I under any contract. Currently, my carrier is Amaysim, which is an Optus reseller, and I found their product to be quite good. However, my needs for increasingly longer mobile calls means my voice charges are creeping up. under the Optus network, Viber calls start out okay, then they just die. Or they were broken up so as to make the call useless. This also happened when one of the users was connected to a good Wi-Fi network. I've installed Skype, used it on my PC with good success, but it sucks down too much battery. I recently installed Line. I haven't heard of Line. Gave up before making my first call. Setup was ridiculously complex. Does anyone have any recommendations for an app, especially one which, like Skype and Line theoretically did, can also talk with a PC? Cheers, Mr. Hawks.
I have to put my thinking cap on. He's nailed a few of them there.
Skype, yeah, if I find one, I'll let you know. But I think they all suffer from that problem.
Yeah, telcos basically want you to use their voice system, so they might have some...
They make it tricky for you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. They're not going to be out there. But I must admit, I still quite like Viber. I use it for my MMSing and SMSing, and it's good. Keeps all those costs down amazingly.
Yeah, if you pay 75 cents or $1.25 for a picture message on your phone network, this is for you. Yeah. One of those apps is good. And last but not least, Newbie via the contact form says, "Hello, Tech Talk Radio Tech Talkers."
Hello, Newbie.
Hey, noobs. Sorry, I haven't messaged you in a while. I've been busy. Wanted to ask the team about churning ISPs. I've been with my current provider for 8 years, looking to change, mainly due to cost. Currently, I'm with iiNet on a home and phone bundle, deciding to change to Internode. I've been quite happy with iiNet.
The same mob.
I haven't really run into many problems, except for 2 outages across all of Western Australia earlier in the week. Yeah, that would be a problem.
That's pretty big.
But I know that there are many ISPs out there that can provide my 20 gigabytes per month of ADSL 2 Plus with home phone for a cheaper price. Yes, I do understand there is a compromise between cost and quality of service support. What I'm unsure about is roughly how long will I be without internet if I churn, and I don't understand what a DSLAM is. Do I have to check what this is on at the moment? There may be extra fees to move to Internode. What to do, what not to do. Cheers, Lewis, a.k.a. Newbie.
May I?
Please, Graham.
A DSLAM is a DSL is digital subscriber line. That's the type of connection you're using. And it's a DSL access module, DSLAM. So and that's the equipment at the exchange that's like, it's the equivalent of the modem at the other end of your modem at your house. So it's the equipment that's that talks to your modem over the phone line. Internode, in my opinion, are a very good balance between quality and pricing. As Andrew mentioned, Internode and iiNet are kind of own each other at the moment. I'm not sure which owns which. iiNet owns Internode, perhaps, but Internode is still operating as a separate entity, and they have some really good advantages over the competition in the technical things that they do with the lines. One big advantage is that Internode now have access to all of iiNet's DSLAMs, which is very, very good. It means that most likely it'll be a very simple move.
And you may not have to have any outage for any length of time.
You might have a short amount of downtime. Certainly, you might have to reprogram your router to put in the new username and address for Internode. So you'll notice it'll go offline when the change goes through. And then if you reprogram your router and then with a bit of luck, you'll be able to get back online within a couple of hours.
I'd check with your provider how long you're going to be down for, because it can be anywhere from half a day to 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely right. That was going to be my next point. And the best way to find out, seriously, is to ring iiNet sales, Internode sales, if you're going to Internode, or the sales department of your provider that you're churning to, and get them to give you advice. And you'll need to provide all sorts of information about what your current... line that your current ADSL is on. They will figure out the technical stuff. They'll work out whether it can be done in a rapid transfer or whether that you're going to have some downtime, whether you're going to have to disconnect and reconnect. So yeah, there's dozens of different variables as to whether you can do it in a rapid way or whether it is going to take 2 weeks. But I've found that the people at Internode generally very helpful, and if you do have any trouble, drop me an email and I'll ask my technical contact at Internode, who will hopefully provide the right info.
On Newbie, that's a good offer.
There you go.
Wow. Personalised service. Personalised service from the TikTok radio panel.
Just it might also pay to Google Fast Tune and have a look on some of the Whirlpool sites and things like that, because that's currently fairly topical and active. They talk about that there.
Whirlpool
as well.
Will have some very good information, idea. But if you're not absolutely sure, there's all sorts of little technicalities and things that can get in the way if you're trying to churn, and depending on exactly what you're trying to do.
What I would say, just make sure you've got a mobile broadband card handy for a day or two. Even if you're running prepaid, at least you'll be online if you need to check things.
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah.
Alrighty.
That's the correspondence, Andrew.
You're kidding, and that's the end of the show.
Well, that's the end of the show.
Yeah, fantastic.
Website Gadget Nodspot
coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Been an interesting week. I had a bit of a chuckle on the news this morning, Dr. Ron. The CEO of Yahoo.
Oh, I heard that.
Scott Thompson.
Mainstream media. He said he had a computer science degree, but
he didn't.
It turns out he didn't have a computer science degree.
Ama.
So he has been somewhat moved out of an organisation for fibbing. If I may use the word fibbing.
Was it suggested that he resign?
Yes.
And that his pants might be alight?
Yeah. He wouldn't want to work in the industry.
His pants are on fire.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep. See what I did there?
That's good. That's tricky. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. You want some aloe vera? Burn, baby.
Aloe vera?
Aloe vera. Thompson might. Mr. Thompson might.
Absolutely. He agreed to step down from his role immediately following a week of controversy surrounding a biography that falsely claimed he had a computer science degree. The company issued a statement confirming Thompson's departure, saying simply that he had left the company.
Ooh.
As you do. Anyway, there's a good... Don't make things up when you're going to be a CEO. You need to sort of... It's all right when you're just going for lesser jobs in organisations. You can probably stretch the truth a little bit and cover it.
We all talk ourselves up in interviews, but there's having degrees.
There's a difference between talking yourself up and just outright
lying about qualifications.
It's not a good idea to claim to have academic qualifications that you don't actually have, is it, no. Dr. Ron?
No.
Oh,
I never claimed Jacques. I had an academic qualification.
No, that's his rap name.
That's it. It's my rap name.
Dr. Ron.
That's how it works.
Now,
yo.
In the house.
I'm in trouble now.
I'm a doctor of PC, USB, ABC, 123. That's my...
And Facebook.
Was has been in the news a bit lately too.
I was.
I'm trying to give you easy edit points here.
That's appreciated.
Completely and utterly failed now. Three, two, one.
Was has been in the news a bit lately, and today is no exception. I caught him on the 7:30 report the other night, spruiking the works of Apple and the future beyond Mr. Jobs. But since Mr. Jobs has left the fold, if
shuffled
I can say
off
that,
this mortal coil,
Was has, I think, I don't know whether it's just me, but have you noticed him to be a little bit more vocal about?
Have I noticed
empire that
Steve
that he
Jobs
started?
Been more vocal since he died?
No. Was.
Oh, the okay.
They're both Steves.
They are.
Steve has been a little bit more vocal. And this week, today, in fact, was no exception as Woz basically came out and renewed his desire to see the consumer electronics giant, that is Apple, open up its architecture to the masses, allowing savvy users to expand
that's an old argument.
And add to their products at will.
Unix.
Yes, exactly, Dr. Ron.
Ron has a frog in his throat.
There's an operating system called Clear Your Throat, and it goes along those lines. Now, do you think Woz would have come out and said this, 12 months ago?
He wouldn't have been asked. Is the reason we're hearing more from him is because people are talking to him more because the other bloke's not around to talk to.
That's my point. Anyway, Woz has been quite vocal in recent times about the future of the company and where it's going to go.
It's probably because
he's
a name that people recognise, along with Steve Jobs was Woz. And people don't know Tim Cook as much. So maybe he's just sort of...
Who?
Helping...
Sorry.
He's a chef, isn't he?
Maybe, that was harsh.
Maybe Sorry. He's trying to help, rally the troops and allay everyone's fears and say how everything's fine, we're still Apple.
Anyway, Woz is in the country at the moment.
Is he?
Yeah, he's in
G'day,
Sydney.
G'day, Woz.
He's doing a bit of a circuit.
He is. He's on the prowl.
Why don't we have him on here?
Well, can you organise it?
I'll see what I can do.
That'd be good. Anyway, so there you go. Open source for Apple. I can't see it happening in the next little bit, but...
I don't know. That's the open architecture.
Open architecture. I beg your pass, yes. Yes. All right. In other interesting news, the patches are still coming thick and fast for all your favorite operating systems, and in particular Microsoft. They on Tuesday shipped 7 patches to address the 23 vulnerabilities, including the fresh fixes for the flaws that could enable the espionage Trojan. Now, am I pronouncing this correctly? Dooku. To spread.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close.
Is that
close.
How you pronounce it?
Yeah. Yep.
3 of the 7 bulletins were rated critical by Microsoft, but all of the attention seemed squarely focused on one, a rather convoluted fix that remedies 10 issues in Windows, Office, Silverlight, and .NET. So as Graham would say,
do your updates.
That's right. That's updates, exactly yes. what he would say.
Yes, do your
he
updates.
He was lost for words yeah. just there for the moment.
Sorry, Andrew.
Ah, dear. That's all right. All right, now back to one of our favourite stories. It seems that Optus can are going to take the AFL / NRL shenanigans as high as it can possibly go well, with statements that basically said, let's sort this out once and for all.
Yeah, and they need to. It's good that Optus are doing this because the most recent decision is wrong and most unfortunate for consumers. And you're hearing a lot of bluster from not only from certain AFL chiefs, but also from certain actual media outlets who are reporting on this in an extremely biased way, biased towards the AFL and NRL side of things.
So they've exercised their 21 days, and they've decided that, or Mr. O'Sullivan, who is the CEO of Optus, has decided to take it to the High Court and sort it out once and for all. So yeah. I guess we'll watch this space yet again. This is as high as they can possibly go. And hopefully there'll be some resolution one way or another.
Hopefully the court will make them realise that they have to live in the modern world and they have to have an understanding that when they sell free-to-air broadcast rights, that that includes people that are going to time shift, which is all the Optus subscribers were doing.
So we'll see what happens
and
there in the mix.
What also should happen is with the government reviewing the situation with the copyright laws and a lot of the other things that are tied up in that, that they should think about strengthening the rights of Australian consumers to both time shift and format shift.
Well, lay the rules down and then everyone knows where they stand, really,
they're particularly weak at the moment as compared even with somewhere like the United States where those rights are very strong.
Speaking of the United States, copyright and the likes.
Yes.
Adam Turner has a view from Hit the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Due to copyright restrictions, I'd like to remind you that it's illegal to make copies of View from the Couch, punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000. Even though the fact you're hearing this message means you're doing the right thing, I'm still going to lecture you for a full 20 seconds before the main feature begins. 18, 19, 20. Yes, treating honest people like criminals is a stupid way to fight piracy. Einstein famously said, "Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results." You don't have to be Einstein to realise that the unskippable DVD piracy warnings are counterproductive. All they do is annoy people who are doing the right thing. Yet the copyright police feel that forcing you to watch even more of these warnings will help reduce piracy. It's like pulling over every driver on the freeway who's observing the speed limit and lecturing them about the evils of speeding, while other drivers are speeding past laughing. All you're actually doing is antagonizing the people who are doing the right thing, perhaps to the point where they'll start speeding just to avoid you. And if more people start speeding, well, the answer is obviously to further antagonize those good drivers. Just in case you didn't realize that you were supposed to pay for the disc that you just paid for, the US government is adding 2 new unskippable piracy messages to DVDs and Blu-rays. Each will be at least 10 seconds long, one to educate you and the other to warn you. Rather than when you first insert the disc, they'll run when you actually press play on the movie. So you'll get a 20-second lecture every time you watch a movie, even though you're a paying customer. Of course, people who pirate movies will never see these warnings, but the copyright police argue that the warnings are part of a public awareness and education campaign designed to educate people who are already doing the right thing. Similar warnings have been on DVDs for years, but apparently they just weren't intrusive and annoying enough because people still copy movies. But I'm sure if the copyright police keep playing the warnings over and over again, they'll get a different result.
Entertaining, informative, Fact. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I make sure when I copy DVD movies, I always make sure the copyright message is always intact at the front.
As you would.
You are so cynical.
Before
at times,
taking them to the market.
How's that? You actually, they're actually going, I'm assuming, this is me reading between the lines, that the MPEG file, which is the movie, they're going to actually put it in the front of that and then program the DVD or Blu-ray so that the fast forward button or the next button does not function.
You don't need to make it part of the same actual video stream.
No, you don't have to
make it unskippable.
But then if they rip it, then you have to edit it.
These people who put in these unskippable things on DVDs have never had a stroppy three-year-old saying, I want it now! I want it now! And you've got to skip and wait and skip and wait and skip and wait and skip and wait. And all you want to do is put the DVD on for the kid so you can have a coffee in peace.
The design of DVD menus is just so stupid a lot of the time.
And some of the bigger brands, and I mean bigger movie houses. Yeah, exactly. Are the worst because they sit there and they force feed you all these new up-and-comings and it's... drives you crazy.
Yeah, it's not good.
Punishing the people that do the right thing, as Adam says, is completely counterproductive because, you know, even DVDs that I own, I have to rip in order to make them watchable.
Indeed. Indeed. Anyway.
Which is illegal in Australia, even to rip it for my own purposes, to watch on my own equipment
defeating
privately.
Defeating DRM or something.
Yeah,
Or to format shift or whatever.
Well, copy protection anyway, not actually DRM, but yes.
Yeah, all right.
But, and that shouldn't be illegal in Australia.
No. Anyway, I must admit, I haven't watched a DVD for ages.
Oh, I'm watching a TV series at the moment on DVD that's half-hour episodes, so there's 12 or 13 or something on a disc, perhaps not that many, but, yeah, a number of episodes on a disc. And at the moment, the menu hasn't got a play-all option in it. Displays a 10-second copyright warning that's got every operation disabled on it, so you can't skip it. But you also can't pause it, so you can't pause it so it's long enough to actually read it all. Which is just dumb, yeah. So if you actually did want to read the copyright warning, you can't because 10 seconds isn't long enough to read this screen full of text.
But is it really condensed, full of text, so that it's so small that on a small screen it's just a mass of blurry images?
Yeah, pretty much. And... yeah, and they display it before every individual episode.
That actually benefits you legally. If you can't read it, then you're not bound by it.
Right.
Is it like when you get those terms and conditions on a website and you have to go down the bottom and say, I have read and understand, and you just go, I didn't read them, I just click the button.
Yeah, because someone worked out once that if you actually read one of those terms and conditions things like that Apple puts up, for example, you know, you'd be sitting there reading for 14 hours or something.
Yeah, they'll email you the 14-page PDF or something, which is legalese, and you probably get bored with the first bit. Are you into Kindles? There's a few people involved with the show that like Kindles, the electronic book readers.
I don't own one, but I really like them.
Yeah, there's a colour one coming. They got a colour one coming.
Graham's got one.
I've got a Kindle. I haven't got a colour Kindle. There's been colour Kindle for a while. It's probably called a Kindle Fire or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know, but Amazon's going to launch a colour Kindle e-reader later this year.
Yeah. So, well, the Kindle is Amazon.
Yeah, I've never seen a colour one.
There's been a colour one around for a while, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Well, Amazon will reportedly launch a new version of its Kindle e-book reader later this year that features a colour display with a capacitive touch panel. So obviously you just...
I think it's the touch panel.
It's a new thing that's good. Citing multiple unnamed sources within Amazon supply chain, Digital Times, which is where I got this from, on Thursday reported Amazon is currently beginning to replace or place parts for the new Kindle, which will launch sometime in the second half of 2012.
Yeah.
I think they're good. You see a lot of them on the train.
It's not a Kindle. It's not purely a book reader. It's a tablet. It runs a version of Android. Or something very similar.
Just a cut-down sort of thing with a SIM in it, is it?
Yeah, something like that.
2.3.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at it now. Yeah, 2.3 version of Android on the current version of the Fire anyway, which came out according to this. Well, I'm looking at Wikipedia, so take this with a grain of salt, but I've got no reason to believe this is incorrect. The current version of the Kindle Fire came out on November 15th last year.
Yeah, Yak saying that the chat with Kindle Fire, and Gareth says colour Kindle is colour e-ink.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It is colour e-ink.
See, that I'd be interested in.
Yeah.
Because the e-ink is what I like about the Kindles.
Cool.
That is the big thing about the Kindle is the e-ink, and that's why I like my black and white Kindle is because it's such a beautiful display for reading on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is different to a... It's a display that looks like paper that you have to shine a light on to read. It's not like a computer screen or a tablet screen, like an iPad or...
So you can sit on the beach in the sun, direct sunlight.
In direct sunlight and you can still see it. Exactly right. Whereas anything that's got a light behind the screen, like a normal computer screen or an iPad or anything like that, would be very difficult to read in bright light.
Yep.
How would you feel if you were driving down a road in the United States and a car came at you and didn't have a driver? What would you do?
Freak out.
Yeah, I would. Dr. Ron? Double take, maybe?
I think a double take would be in order.
Yeah. Google has successfully acquired an autonomous driver's license and official number plates from Nevada, allowing it to test its driverless vehicle on state roads.
Wow.
On public roads.
On public roads.
Acquired a driver's license. I like that.
If you're listening to us in Nevada.
Instead of earned one.
eBay.
Acquired one.
Yeah.
They found one.
Yeah. If you're listening to us in Nevada, move to California. It's not far. It's nice. It's got sun. It's good. It has a bit more water than what Nevada has. A lot less poker machines.
Less gambling.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's exciting.
Very scary,
that's very exciting.
Isn't it?
Do you think they're going to tell people where it's going to go? Like announce its location so they
can
stay away if they want to?
I wouldn't.
Just so you guys know, the robot is going down Main Street at 12 o'clock today.
I would like to see a study on, even though we know that machines can break down and make mistakes and have faults, on the actual...
I don't
actual...
want that to happen at 100 kilometres an hour.
No, but humans are even less reliable. I mean, human drivers cause so many crashes.
I agree with you.
I mean, every car accident that we're aware of and the massive road toll we have, all due to human drivers and human errors at some point in the chain.
You don't have a wife, do you? Because it's never their fault.
Well...
It's always the fault of someone else. Gross generalisation. I know.
I can't speak
Send
to your wife's delusions,
letters.
But... texting and driving was the story I heard.
I may have to hurt you in the car park.
Don't go there because I will get hurt in the car park.
I may have to hurt you in the car park. I'm someone's wife. I was recently in an accident and it actually wasn't my fault.
There you go. See?
There you go. But it was a human's fault.
I'll apologise now to everyone who I've offended.
It was. He was a learner driver though, so he's half a human. He's not fully grown yet.
Speaking of offending people.
No, because he's a teenager. He's not fully grown yet. He's only half a people.
No, I think that...
the eyes of the law.
I think that it's a good thing, and I think that once the technology's bedded down, even though there will be failures and there will be errors and there will be car crashes and there will be death and destruction and all the rest of this, that it won't be as bad as it is with human drivers, and that more automated drivers, more machine drivers on the road is probably going to make for safer roads.
Mm.
Think of the military applications.
And the global warming.
I don't need to think of the military application. That's been thought of well and truly already.
Oh, that's spooky.
And that is a frightening thing.
I saw something in the
Avengers initiative.
Saw something on the ABC's website that one police agency in Australia is going to use drones to spy on crooks, cameras in the air, little droney things.
Well, they did it now,
are
they?
Oh, they've got humans in them. We're talking about we've moved from the road to the sky.
Whoops. Is that not common knowledge?
Okay.
Whoopsie.
Sorry.
I did see something on the news where some person in Sydney, if you're listening to us, naughty,
PC
don't point lasers at the police helicopter. It's not good for your health.
Don't point them at anything. Except the wall to annoy the cat.
During the week. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
They're playing with cats.
Isn't?
That's it. That's not for anything else.
Absolutely.
And pointing at things on blackboards and stuff.
There was a Seinfeld rerun on last night with the episode where George has the laser pointer on his head and he's trying to look at where it's coming from. Do you remember that one?
No, I haven't.
That was funny.
I'd be worried about snipers if I saw a laser pointer on someone's head all of a sudden. Maybe I play too many games.
Is it fair to say that the majority of PC plods out there are fairly autonomous drone-ish anyway?
Take a number for an insult tonight on Tech Talk Radio.
Actually, yeah.
If you're a learner driver
the
or
gamut.
A police officer or a...
Come on, bring it
or
on.
A woman.
Or a woman. Get in line.
Feeling marginalised? Come to us.
I am.
Yeah, we'll marginalise anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the United States, it's illegal to use autonomous drone aerial vehicles for other than military purposes.
Really?
Yeah. because there was a company in California that wanted to use them to deliver burritos or tacos or something, and they got knocked back.
That sounds very Blade Runner-ish, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, Ridley Scott, eat your heart out.
It's a great idea, though. I mean, you know, ringing up for your takeaway Mexican food and having it...
And a drone arrives.
Yeah, just drops it on your front porch in a fully autonomous way by air.
That's creepy.
Mm. Cool, fantastic though. Idea. I want my fast food delivered that way.
Like a splat on your driverless car in the driveway.
It could. Mm. Just watch out for the chimney. Oh, no. Oh, damn.
They couldn't do it, though, because it's not legal to use those sorts of things for non-military purposes in the United States.
In the United States.
Even in California.
Oh.
Which isn't actually part of the United States.
Isn't it?
Of course it is. Oh. Goodness me.
Goodness
me. Of course
me.
It is.
Now, something that I'm looking forward to, something really good that's happening.
Thought they might have seceded or something.
Oh, don't start. Something that I'm looking forward to is the new OLED TVs are starting to come out.
Oh,
the proper
really?
Ones.
The proper ones.
Real OLED.
Yeah, real OLED. Not these LED backlit things ones. That the manufacturers that have been misleading everybody with at the moment.
Yeah, marketed as LED TVs when they're really not.
Yeah, well, this is OLED, which is organic light emitting diodes. And it's very wafer thin. It's the size of your...
It would also be very cool compared to...
It is very cool.
The current... I mean...
Price tag isn't.
Actual temperature-wise, not just coolness factor-wise.
Now, I've been lucky enough to see OLED in the wild, and we're
in
talking...
In the wild or in a trade show?
In a trade show, but it's sort of in the wild because it's sort of, you know...
It was a real
production
thing.
Model, yeah. And it was really working. The great thing I love about these things, apart from the fact that they have great size and... Now, they have great size, but the clarity and the resolution, the blacks are really black. It's really, really good quality stuff. And I saw the one which was a 4K screen, which is twice the resolution of high definition that we have now.
Yeah, yep.
And that just blew our socks off. We're sitting there going, oh, my God, can you look at the resolution on that? So, and your average feature film camera shoots 4K, so we're looking at really good quality one-to-one pictures up
there. Yeah, but a lot of feature films are only in 2K, even in the cinemas on the big
Correct.
Screen. So
yeah, well, I think...
Which is not that much different resolution to true high def,
yeah, well,
1080p.
Mr. Gardner was in talking to us late last year about that, and they're just marginally around the same res as high-definition television. So... Just goes to show, guys, that's what HD can look like on your television sets. Don't believe a word of what the broadcasters say, but...
What we need now is content.
Yeah, but it'll never look like that on the Nine Network's High Def channel. It just won't.
It'll squeeze all these other channels in.
Yeah.
Well, you need your Blu-ray player.
Yeah, and then you will get it. And that's going to be the big advantage, as you said, quite rightly, with the OLED, is going to be the black levels. It's going to have such beautiful dark colours and dark tones and blacks. I can't wait to see one.
They released this year, second half of 2012, but I wouldn't buy one just yet. Unless if you're an early adopter, you're going for a nice big 55-inch OLED, you're going to be up for around about 9K.
Oh, ow.
Okay.
9K is a tad pricey.
I won't be buying one of those.
Yeah.
But then the TV I've got now, which is 40-something inch, I think it's a 46-inch Sony Bravia. Which is an LCD screen with an LED backlight, that would have cost that much when that technology first came out.
Yeah, what you paid for back then would have been 4 or 5-ish potentially, and now they're down to under sub 1,000.
Remember what plasmas were priced at when they first appeared on the circuit?
Yeah, about 9,000.
Mm. Everything starts out about 9,000.
Samsung says it will release the world's first 55-inch model in the second half of this year. That's exciting.
Mm. It is exciting.
It is. And even in production, we have them now in reasonably good size sort of things. They're quite pricey. Sony know how to charge. But then again, Sony are going broke.
They are.
So,
that's going to eat into my story. Don't talk about that one.
Okay, I won't eat into that story then. $5.7 billion is all I'll say there. So, but anyway.
You won't eat into it. You'll just spill the beans.
No, you don't even know what I'm talking about. There's 5.7 billion beans out there. So,
that's a lot of beans.
There is. I must admit, I'm quite excited to see what the IPO is going to do for Facebook during the course of the week, because it's really going to put a value on that. And it leads to one other thing which I saw during the week, and I've just lost my notes here at the moment, but there was a predicted forecast growth of the Apple organization by 2015. Guess what they reckon the stock price will be up for Apple? At the moment, it's around $600.
I reckon it'll be about... 2,000.
Stop reading a rundown, you cheat.
I win.
She does. She wins that one. Yeah.
Do Apple, I get shares because I won?
I don't know. If you want to go and buy them, but Apple's projected stock is looking to be hit around about $2,000 by the end of 2015.
Wow.
There's a graph here I'll hold up to the camera in the studio. You can sort of see the graph, which is looking like very, it's almost like a J curve, really.
It is. If I had a time machine, that's the one thing I would do.
Yeah.
I would go buy Apple shares.
I wonder if Woz has got many shares. I'm sure he has. Be a lot of stock options, I would have thought, back in those days. Mm. Hey, we should take a break because we've been non-stop for a while now.
Games.
When we come back, we're going to get a double whack of gaming from you because you weren't here last week and we missed it.
Oh,
we missed the games. Someone said in the chat earlier this evening. That was antagonistic at its best, wasn't it?
That's today's word, apparently.
Maybe we should have Tech Talk Radio word of the
Adam
day.
Adam said it.
Certainly
said
my
it
motto this week.
What, not to be or to
and,
be?
To be antagonistic.
Okay, well, why not? The world needs more antagonism. Take a break. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, you are. Hello, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Ryan, Lena, Graham, this evening to entertain you all and keep everyone in wherever you are today listening around this wonderful country, whether you're in Sydney, listening to us on 2RRR. Hello, everyone in Sydney. Whether you're in WayFM down in Tassie.
YFM, Hugh on FM as well.
Hugh on FM?
Tassie. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely everywhere. Up in Cairns. Oh, look, the list goes on.
Catherine. Hi, sorry.
They're very dark on you that you didn't stop as you went through Catherine and all those sort of places.
Sorry about that.
So, anyway, hello, everybody. Wherever you might happen to be listening to us today, I managed to call the Commonwealth Bank today, my bank of choice, and I had a reason to call them. It was the fact that I had a crack in my credit card, and I thought, well, time to get a new credit card. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I found out that you can actually do absolutely everything online except order a new credit card. And I think my phone conversation with the girl at the other end when I got through lasted all of about maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds tops, absolutely. But it took me 5 minutes to fight the IVR system to get through. And I've got a phone at the office which has got one of those displays on it where all the numbers, when you type in, you can see the phone number you've written on and all those sort of things that comes up. Anyway, it had managed to roll into the next number and roll down the screen and all that because it wanted to know every single thing. It told me my credit card balance. It told me absolutely everything before it said, do you really want to speak to an operator? And I said, yeah, I do, because I couldn't order. And she said, yeah, you're right. The only thing you can't do online was order a credit card. New credit card if one had got a crack in or something like that.
With IVRs like that, if they're being that uncooperative, I start experimenting with buttons that they don't say you can press.
Yeah.
So you try pressing 9 a few times or hash a few times and just see where it gets you.
Yeah.
Anarchist.
I think zeros are good. Yeah, recalcitrant. I think zero is a good option too. That just generally tends to get you through everywhere. I know someone's got a list on the internet thingy about
zero
is
an industry standard for the operator.
Is
the
it?
Internet thingy.
Yeah, it'll take off. You watch.
Because in America, it's zero is for an operator and 9 is for an outside line. It's the way that their dialing plans usually work. It's the opposite in Australia. We usually have 0 for an outside line here and 9 for an operator.
Why are we changed? Why are we worlds apart? Is it because we're upside down to them?
Because there's a big ocean in the way.
Yeah.
Our telephone system evolved out of the British telephone system, not out of the American telephone system.
Okay, so they just wanted to be different, did they?
They want to be different with everything.
Well, they are.
They've got their fancy 23 meg ISDN instead of, Sorry, the 23-channel ISDN instead of a 30-channel ISDN. They've got their fancy NTSC television format instead of PAL, and they've got...
Yeah, I had an email. Their,
you know, oh, well, let's drive on the right-hand side of the road.
High fructose corn syrup instead
jinx.
Of sugar.
Hijinks. Exactly.
Mm. I like their road rules over there. You drive into a three-way or a four-way intersection, what we would call a T-intersection, where there's stop signs, and it's the first person to arrive has right-of-way going through the... intersection.
So there's stop signs facing every direction.
Yeah. If there's a stop sign every way, the first person to rock up has right of way through the intersection.
Or the angriest and the biggest car. It's why they all drive SUVs.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. I was in Malta and they've got the fastest person into the roundabout has right of way.
That's a lot always, like Bali.
That's a bit like Melbourne.
Indonesia, yeah.
Mm. Melbourne.
It's a bit like Melbourne.
Whoever's maddest.
Melbourne. It's like bumper cars in Melbourne. Don't start me. But anyway. Hey, Lena, it must be time for your turn.
Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Yay! You didn't get to play that last week.
No, we missed that. A bit of my sex.
You don't have to play it twice, though.
Oh.
You only have to play it once. We'll continue on.
Okay.
Diablo 3 is out tomorrow.
Yay! Excited.
I'm so excited.
There was a lot of gossip in the green room before we came on air tonight about Diablo 3.
There was.
Are there prerequisites?
Amazing.
Ron, you were asking about prerequisites.
I don't want to... pull Lena's segment down. It just started. Andrew will pull it.
No, I got into trouble. I mentioned $5.7 billion.
Oh, yeah, that's later on.
I was wondering if you had to play Diablo 2 before you played Diablo 3, but you reckon you can just jump straight in.
Yeah, you don't have to. Obviously, you're going to get more out of it. It's like the Avengers. If you watch all the movies first, you'll understand more of the lore and more of the backstory and more of where all the characters are coming from. And you might not find the voice acting as silly, apparently. A lot of people who are new to Diablo 3 thought Deckard Cain in particular had a really stupid voice actor behind it, but it's actually because they're keeping the same to what was in Diablo 2, so they didn't want to mess around with Deckard Cain, which I'm glad because he's hilarious. Stay a while and listen. But yeah, so you don't have to play Diablo 1 or Diablo 2. But if you feel like it, go for it. If you get the collector's edition of Diablo 3, you will get copies of Diablo 2 Lord of Destruction in the Soulstone USB stick that is included with it, which is pretty cool. So even if you're new to Diablo 3, you can go straight from that when you're finished to go, oh, I wonder what Diablo 2 was like, and then you can go play that, which is fun. But it's both Amazon and Blizzard's most pre-ordered game ever.
Wow. That's a big call, isn't it?
That's really big. Blizzard's... and Amazon. So Blizzard are the people who
make Warcraft.
Diablo. Yep, and World of Warcraft. Yep.
So that's big. That's big.
Yeah.
They distracted my life for many years, the Blizzard people, but no more.
No. Now,
children for that.
If you do have a Diablo 3 pre-order, then you contributed to that number, unless... bum, bum, bum.
This is the other big news today.
It is. Unless you did a pre-order with Game.
The game company called Game.
The game retailer
now
called
Game. Now, they're a purple logo, aren't they? Yes.
Big, all in capitals, Game in purple.
And they seem to be in most of those big multinational shopping centres that are around Australia.
They are in a lot of them.
What's happened?
They were in a lot more. They are in some now. They've gone into voluntary administration.
Doors are shut. Oh, no, still trading?
They're still trading.
Game
doors
over.
Doors are open, but they're not trading within a full capacity. Just recently I talked about, not too long ago, I think probably a month or within a three-month period, I talked about the parent company in the UK going into voluntary administration, so now the Australian
followed
company
suit
have
you,
as well.
It?
Yeah. Select game stores will not be receiving stock of Diablo 3, which means they cannot honour their pre-orders.
Oh, ouch.
So they can't give you the stock, and not only that, but refunds for pre-orders will not be provided.
Oh, so that means they've done their day completely? They just won't get anything?
You won't get anything. The following text message was sent to customers who have pre-existing orders with stores with no stock. Now, some stores have stock of it, some don't. If you got this text message, your store doesn't. It said, due to the appointment of an administrator to our business this morning, it is with regret that I inform you that our stores will not be receiving any stock of Diablo 3. Because of this, we will regrettably be unable to fulfill any pre-orders. Also, we'll be unable to refund any deposits paid towards a pre-order of Diablo 3. If you need any more info, please email customer relations. If you got that text message...
You're an unsecured creditor. Congratulations.
You are an unsecured creditor. According to a store manager of a store not receiving the stock, cash placed on Diablo 3 orders cannot be used to buy other games, and it cannot be used to pre-order other unreleased titles. It's simply money the customer will have to write off. Incredibly,
ouch.
This is not illegal.
No, it's not.
No, this is not illegal. Despite the fact you gave money for something and it all fell through and you didn't get what you wanted, it's not illegal, unfortunately.
I think also, too, if businesses go into where these guys have gone, I think legally, and I can stand corrected on this, but if someone's paid someone off within 6 months, like say you're a supplier and you've got a big check, oh, we're going bankrupt, but here you go, you have yours first, they can actually legally get that back from those people as well, which is very interesting.
I'm not an expert in insolvency, but if you have had, if you paid with a credit card, you can dispute the payment itself. That might be a course of action.
That's a good
option,
isn't it? Yeah.
But another solution, which some may
find... Not getting the goods for which you have paid.
Exactly. Mark Searles at Kotaku has said another solution, which some may find unwieldy, and he's not kidding, is to register as a creditor. Game Australia's website actually provides the details on how you can do this by sending proof of debt forms to this address. It's got an address down there. Technically, with Game going into administration, consumers with paid pre-orders have become unsecured creditors. Now, the Corporations Act determines that the order that creditors are paid, and unsecured creditors are at the bottom of a very, very long list. Lots of people want money from them. You're dead last, basically.
The banks come first.
Yeah.
Secured.
There's more information on the ACCC website under Insolvency and Consumer Rights, but to be honest, you don't have many, unfortunately. The good news is that you can probably still get collector's editions in particular. There's still a few. The big yellow shop has some. That's where I got mine from.
Really? I thought they were getting out of the gaming thing.
No, you're thinking the other one.
I was thinking the black and yellow one. This is the yellow one.
No, the black and yellow one.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not.
There's no harm in actually saying who we're talking about here. Is there? Is there, please?
No, we're not ABC, are we?
All right.
All right, JB Hi-Fi are still doing collector's edition.
Now, they're the yellow one. The black and yellow one's Electronic Dick.
Ah, right. No.
Dick Smith Australia.
Dick Smith.
Correct. Owned by Woolies.
I think Dick Smith are selling them still, but they're just...
Are they?
Probably not going to be very reliable, I'd say. But they might be. You never know. Everyone might think that, and therefore they have lots of copies. You never know. There seems to be lots of standard editions around. If you want a collector's edition, there are a few still available. I'm going the collector's edition because this is a game I've been waiting over a decade for, and I'm extremely excited.
And you're a gamer geek after all.
I am. I don't buy collector's editions that often,
though. You've been waiting for this since you were 10.
Ha ha ha.
Lols.
Yes, because I'm 20. Yes, yeah. No.
Picking up what Andrew said before, I think ASIC, which is the Australian Securities and Investments Commission,
there's
recently made a change made recently to the law which says that directors now have to sign an insolvency statement. You know a little bit about this, Andrew? He says, pointing at Andrew.
Yeah. No, I know nothing about it. I'm not insolvent, thank you very much.
No, but it doesn't matter. The thing is that you sign an insolvency statement.
Otherwise, I deal with Arvin, that's another story.
The statement's registered with ASIC, which says it has huge penalties for you personally as a director if you trade and do things like what you said, like you accept checks or whatever, and you are aware that you can't pay your suppliers.
The law has changed if you are a director of a company.
Just recently.
Traditionally, you used to be able to hide behind a lot of mumbo-jumbo legalese type sort of thing, sell assets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And they've tightened up on that quite a bit. So even if you are, if you're a director of one of those companies and you do go this way, then you can't, it's not as easy to.
Well, if you're aware that there were issues, you can't just keep training. You've got responsibilities and you can be held personally liable if you neglect those responsibilities.
So it's not good news if you do.
It's not good news for the people that have
especially if you've paid off the whole game or almost the whole game. Because I think the amount to put down on deposit you could choose. So unfortunately, that's a real bummer. But at least it happened,
Yeah. So you've got your game on order. You're going
to
get it?
I have. I've got JB Hi-Fi going to deliver it to my house in the next few days, even though the game's released tomorrow. So it's going to be an agonizing wait. But I've waited.
Really? Why wouldn't you just go to the shop and get it? I can understand if you lived out there.
Well, collector's editions are really hard to find. You have to order them online. Yeah. Okay. I would have preferred to have gone down to a JB tomorrow morning and picked it up. But apparently collector's editions are hard to get. And there's going to be a lot of people doing the same thing. So I probably don't want to go down there and fight amongst the people for this game that I've been waiting so long for. So I did the tried and true thing of just patience pays off. Speaking of, the next Tomb Raider.
Lara Croft.
Yep, Lara Croft. The next has been delayed by a year.
Oh, no. She'll get more wrinkly then.
No, probably less wrinkly, actually.
Okay, so how that works.
They've just said that they really don't want to bring out an unpolished game and that needs more work, which isn't...
she needs a bit of
isn't really surprising. They've actually done a full reboot. She's got shorter hair. She's got smaller assets, which is nice, more realistic. she's actually looks kind of normal.
Proportionate.
Yeah, but they've actually given her a bit of a...
Did somebody miss the point here somewhere?
No, she's... The reboot, there was artwork on Game Informer a few months ago that looked amazing and got everyone really excited about this game, but it's basically all we've seen. There hasn't been a lot out there. So people aren't really surprised that they've been delayed because there's just not been that much about it out there, but it should be amazing. BioShock Infinite has been delayed as well. To February 2013, and it won't be playable at E3 this year, which is coming up in the next few months. BioShock Infinite, obviously the third in the BioShock installment, in the BioShock franchise, which is taking to the air instead of the ocean like it was.
Not underwater.
No, Rapture. Will not be Rapture. I think it's Columbia or something like that. Column something with column at the start. Speaking of E3, Valve will not be making any new announcements at E3.
Gee, what's the point in going? There'll be nothing there.
See, Valve are cheeky sometimes, though, so you can never really tell where they're saying, no, we're not going to announce any new products at E3. Oh, hey, here's Half-Life 3. Oh, no one knew it was coming. But having said that, if they say they're not going to, then they're probably not going to. But you never really know with Valve because they like to be cheeky. They did make Portal after all, and Portal's a very cheeky game.
Yeah.
Portal 2 sells 4 million copies.
Is that all?
No, that's a lot.
No, that's nothing.
That's a lot.
Rovio has now sold 1 billion downloads of Angry Birds. It's nothing.
They're slightly different. I think you'll agree. Slightly different games. Casual games are a lot easier to sell than the large AAA titles. Because we all have Angry Birds at least like 3 times on each device, right? We've bought Angry Birds on our iPhone or iPad or Android phone and Android tablet.
A lot of Android users have downloaded it for free without actually paying for it.
It's a good toilet game.
Don't say toilet game.
No.
Don't. And definitely don't use your little flush thing. If you do, I'm going to leap over the desk and throw that computer out the door because it's so gross. So gross. Portal 2 has sold 4 million copies, which is very exciting. And the DLC is now available. I was talking about the Portal 2 DLC a little while ago. Yep, see, Graham's getting excited. The Perpetual Testing Initiative DLC is a level editor, which means...
What?
Yeah, you can create, share, and download Portal 2 levels. Players can publish their creations to the Steam Workshop, where users can browse, vote on, and select other levels to try out. Obviously, the DLC has not been announced for PS3 and Xbox because a level editor for those is just impossible.
This is going to be right up your street, Dr. Ron.
Yep. Oh, I love the sound of this.
Build aperture testing environment.
Just as well, you...
Brian Explosion.
Just as well, you've got a bit of spare time on your hands these days, Dr. Ron.
I know.
Yep.
There goes the dog walking.
Lucky I quit my day job.
Sorry, Tess, you're about to pork up.
Yeah, the dog's going to get fat.
Awesome. Yeah.
So that should be really exciting, where you can actually... I like the fact that you can vote on ones you've found. So you can play a testing thing, and then if you really enjoyed it, vote on it, and then you can probably search by the ones that have the most votes and see the really amazing things that people come up with, because the modding community and the people who edit levels and stuff, it's a real community all of its own.
Oh,
and they can do some amazing things.
Not to mention the fact that the type of people who are going to be into Portal to do that sort of stuff are going to be pretty amazing sort of people. It's not a typical game. It's got a twist to it, and a twisted outlook to it that's going to appeal to just the right kind of mind to create some horrible levels.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I used to make Wolfenstein levels.
Ah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Dr. Ron.
And I used to give them to Graham, I think.
Possibly, and I could never play them.
That's a really, really great segue.
Back
did you know that
days.
Wolfenstein 3D is coming out? It's going to be free on the iPhone, iPad, and also on the web.
Ooh.
So it's Wolfenstein 3D, like, rebooted,
yep.
Is it?
20th anniversary. 20 years ago it first came out. We first started
definitely
wasting our
showing
time
the age now.
Doing a lot. And let me tell you, the graphics have not come of any further age too. Says
no, they wouldn't want to.
Wolfenstein were classic.
It's a first-person shooter, and it was just a classic in its day, and it's making a comeback. I like seeing these vintage games come back.
For many people, it would have been their introduction to first-person shooters.
Yeah.
People of my vintage.
And it was one of the very first games, I think, to use that 3D rendering engine, like that look and feel. Wolfenstein 3D was very, very early. It was a pioneer of that style.
Well, ID Software has created a free browser version of the game that includes 3 episodes and 30 levels. The game's also being offered...
I always assumed that was pronounced id.
It could be.
It's id. Yeah, id software, yep.
Okay, id software, there you go.
I was with Andrew, but I'll be corrected as well.
Because it's lowercase.
It is. The game's also being offered on Apple's App Store for a limited time for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, and includes all 6 original episodes, Dr. Ron.
Fantastic.
Mm. And 60 levels.
60?
60, that's a lot.
Go forth and download.
That's one more than 59.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say thunder.
No, it's good.
We're getting up to 57 billion yet? I'm hanging out for this.
Sony shares drop to a 31-year low.
Gee.
Ow.
They've had it too good for too long, haven't they?
They have.
In every aspect. Movies, broadcast, gaming. Yeah.
They're dropping over 6%. The share price has dropped over 6% to $14.16.
Redundancies.
That's not comparable to our $2,000 Apple shares we're talking about before.
No.
No, not at all.
No.
So is it a good time to buy Sony shares?
It
Sony,
might be.
No.
Sony were great in portable music.
Not offer financial advice. So you're not registered financial advice.
Oh, no, don't take it. Don't take what we say.
No.
You remember the old Walkman? They were instrumental in getting portable music to us. Look where they are today.
Would you board the Titanic after it's hit the iceberg?
What? Only if you're in search and rescue.
Well, yeah. No, it's interesting. I think you've got more details than I do. You've got a full press release over there, don't you?
Oh, I put it away because you told me to put it away.
don't listen to me. Silly. No, yeah, that's...
I'm a dig.
I only put a dot point there because I thought I had too much to fit in one segment. I wasn't sure whether you're going to cut me off again.
So,
But they have dropped to a 31-year low. That's a really long time. And
everybody lost absolute faith in them when their PlayStation Network, A, got hacked, and B, was down for months.
Mm.
It was down for a long time.
Mm. Yep.
It was.
And no one's, you know, buying their PlayStation 3 because it's old and old technology and the new PlayStation hasn't appeared yet.
And the Vita wasn't doing
as
well.
No one much like the PlayStation Vita, which is their new portable one.
What's going on there?
Everybody used to make television using Sony television cameras and recording equipment and digital Betamax and all that sort of stuff. And now everybody's recording television using Canon digital SLRs and memory cards. What else? Oh, their factories got washed away in the tsunami.
Yep.
What else happened to Sony?
It doesn't help. They failed to innovate.
Yeah, well, last Thursday they reported a net loss of $3.2 billion in the first quarter of 2011 to close its fourth straight year in the red. The electronics and entertainment giant struggled through the year, reporting an annual loss of $5.7 billion, the worst in the company's 66-year history.
I've picked up a few cheap Bravias with my recent house move, and I wish I could pay more for my Bravia just to help them out, because Bravias are really good, so I'll give them more money. Here, take more than what the price is. But, yeah, for everything else, you're not doing too well.
New president. To swap presidents. Should try that in the United States.
Aw.
What's wrong with Mr. Obama?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just one of the things. He's out there campaigning as we speak.
He is.
But we're not a political show.
We're not. Minecraft.
Oh, dear.
Here we go.
Which I like to go on about.
Yeah.
See, I like that reaction.
Fire up now.
Going out to get a drink, Dr. Ron, you coming?
That's all I had to say. I just wanted to get that reaction.
I'm sitting right here. Go ahead,
Was released on the Xbox 360.
Mini discs.
What?
Mini discs?
We're still talking about Sony. Sorry, it's in the chat. They're on delay.
Somebody's trying to talk up mini discs. I think it's a bit late to try and talk up mini discs.
Minecraft has been released on mini discs. Sorry.
Yak's gone, no!
Minecraft was released on the Xbox 360, and it was profitable in 1 hour.
Wow.
So it paid for itself in 1 hour.
It's good return on your investment, isn't it?
It's a very good return, with over 400,000 units sold in the first 24 hours.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. So that's it's $20 on the Xbox Live Arcade, and you can do 4-player split screen.
That sounds awesome. So how does that work? Talk us through that.
You can have sort of similar, if you used to play like GoldenEye and those sorts of games and Mario Kart and all those sorts of things when you've got the four players on the one television screen, you can do that on the Minecraft as well. So that's pretty cool. Because playing co-op on Minecraft is one of the really fun experiences of it. One of the best ways to play it is to build things together as a team or attack each other and go rogue and grief each other, as they call it. But it's finally on Xbox. So all the people who don't have a PC or don't like PC gaming and prefer console gaming can actually get a taste of what Minecraft's like, which I think is why it did so well, because gamers pay attention to what's going on. And if you don't subscribe to a particular mode of gaming, whether it be a console or PC or whatever, you miss out on those exclusives. So with it going on Xbox, I think a lot of Xbox users just wanted to see what all the fuss was about, and seems to be going really well. And
so for this Minecraft, though, it's a game for the geekiest of the geeky, obsessive, compulsive, absolute nerds.
No, it's not. It absolutely is.
It's only for people that have seriously got a sheep loose in the back paddock. It's really...
Aww.
Graham, there are 50% of the people in this room that are addicted to it. You don't make statements like that.
I just like doing it. I can stop any time, man.
I can stop any time, man.
So Graham's not a nerd or a geek, is what he's saying.
Well, I am. There's
no nerd cred now. He's just talked himself out of all that.
Yep. Ha. Yeah. You wish you were cool like us.
Oh, he just disappeared in a puff of logic. Where's Graham gone? Oh, no.
Lol. I'm perfectly happy to be excluded from the type of group of people that are Minecraft fans.
Don't you marginalise us.
Oh, that's
marginalised, Leah.
It's Lego with monsters. How is that not awesome? How is that not amazing? It's Lego with monsters that go boom and explode all your stuff at random. It's hilarious and
hilarious.
Heaps of fun. If you let me play Minecraft with you for 40 minutes, possibly with the help of alcohol, I could make you love that game.
Graham, that's a good offer. I'll take it.
Yep.
All right, you're on because I'll enjoy the alcohol.
Yeah, see? You lure them in. First one's free. That's how it works. Oh. And then...
Happy hour.
He'll love it. I swear, he will sit in that chair and say, Minecraft isn't as bad as I said it was.
No, watch. I've seen you two go at it. Not you and Graham, but you and Dr. Ron.
Playing Minecraft.
Click, click, click. Have you got your key ring here?
I do.
Lena's got a Minecraft key ring.
It's poor for radio.
What else have you got, Lena? Is that it?
That's it.
Wow, yeah. What a news. That made up that for 2 weeks, lot, didn't though. It?
That was awesome.
And there was a few I didn't include that I might put in next week.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Something to look forward to.
Even better.
Yeah.
Before we go to the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week, which is coming up pretty shortly.
Because Diablo's coming out, so I might not turn up next week.
Oh, okay. Does that mean you'll be living in a dark room somewhere?
I might be.
What are you doing? He's taking photos.
Taking a photo of my pickaxe keychain.
During the course of the week, I had a reason to purchase online some software. I think you were in the office when I did it, Dr. Ron.
Was I?
Yeah, I bought some stuff online. Anyway, I tried to log on and use my PayPal account to do said transaction.
Oh, this is when I said out loud, I hate PayPal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I was there.
It is. Yep. Anyway, what happened was it was a simple transaction. It was under $100 or anything like that. And I tried to put in my credit card details to purchase online.
Yep.
Now, my credit card purchases, or should I say, when I clicked the button to buy, PayPal came back and said, I'm sorry, you cannot use that card for this purchase. And that was really all the information that it gave me on the PayPal. And I said, no, I've put the wrong number in, or something's not quite right, or anything. So I had another go at it. Anyway.
Same result.
Happened. I'm sorry, you cannot use this PayPal. It didn't say why. And now I know the card had plenty of balance in it and all that sort of stuff. So there's no reason from my end that I could understand why this would happen. Since having a look, and I'm looking at it right now, I shall hold up my little notebook here for Exhibit A. You'll probably all be aware, and you can verify this, the $2.99 debits in my credit card.
It says pending, PayPal.
Which says pending.
99 cents, 99 cents.
So they couldn't...
They stooged you $1.98.
They couldn't actually process my credit card, yet they saw fit to have a go at 99 cents on each occasion. My credit card.
Now, I've missed something here. Why is PayPal... What is the relationship between PayPal and that credit card if you were just paying on your credit card on the
Because
website?
PayPal was the gateway that was offered for this vendor, right. And they gave me no choice. They said, you can pay with PayPal or you can put your credit card details in.
So you...
And I opted for the credit card details.
Well, why is PayPal involved then?
Well, they were providing the gateway for this vendor. So...
Oh, okay. All right.
PayPal has a service where you don't have to have a PayPal account to pay by credit card.
They're the merchant that...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I understand. Sorry. Yep. Okay, so for whatever reason, they've bounced the transaction, but they've charged you nearly $1.
They told me the card could not be used for this transaction, whatever that means.
Possibly because the card was linked to an active PayPal account?
Don't know. But still, you put a card number in, you won't expect a transaction to go through. But even if it was linked, why would you not be able to use your credit card?
PayPal are funny about this. I've had issues where I at one point had two different PayPal accounts. I had one that was attached to my work email address and one that was attached to my home email address. And I wanted to attach the credit card that was attached to one. I wanted to then change it and use it on the other one. And they wouldn't let me do that because they said that that credit card was associated with another account. Presumably, it's to try and protect you against if your credit card gets stolen. They say, no, we know this credit card belongs to that account. We're not going to allow it to be used for anything else.
Yeah. Odd. I see your logic, but it's sort of more inconvenient than it would be.
Yeah, in those specific cases, in your case, if that was the reason, and in my case where I had the home account that I wanted to start using, it was, quite inconvenient, yeah.
Anyway, I'll be watching this space.
All security measures are a balance between convenience and security, though.
Yeah, but if it's one of those things where, because a lot of people tend to let those little credits go through. Yeah, you see them on your statement. You go,
yeah, I wouldn't be.
Yeah, but you said it was pending, so you might find that they get reversed.
I'm hoping that they do. That's why I'm not having.
It's worth keeping an eye on. Yeah,
I'm not having a big go at them yet, but we'll see what happens in the next 24 hours. But that was a couple of days ago. So
where are you at with it now?
I'm pending.
Yeah, but did you use some other payment method to buy the software you wanted? Or
yeah, I did. I ended up having to prepay it and then bought it that way. So. It was one of those fiddly sort of things. I didn't really want to do it, but nonetheless, we managed to get there and do it. But yeah, I think just everyone needs to be aware that sometimes when you put your credit card in online, they put little debits in there just to make sure that they can punch away through the space-time continuum to get to your bank account.
Yeah, I've seen that before, and often if you sign up for a free trial or something, they'll put a dollar credit on just to check that the credit card's real and works. And quite often that gets reversed later or gets taken off the cost that you finally end up paying if you go ahead with a purchase or whatever it might happen to be.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you know next week.
Keep an eye on it.
I will. So, and the dollar's at parity again now, so I don't want to go shopping anymore. I've had enough. I'm only going to buy things I need.
Famous last words.
Because it's laughing.
It's not a bargain if you don't need it, Andrew.
No, but it's also more of a bargain when it's on our side, because you feel like you're getting value for money when you go and key in.
When
you want to buy $50 worth of something and it comes out $49.95, it's got to be a bargain, doesn't it?
But if you don't need it and you don't buy it,
I needed it.
Did you?
I did. Okay. Hey, in other news, once again, before we do go to the Oddspot Gadget and all that sort of stuff that we do at the end of the show, the interesting article that came out during the course of the week, which I sort of had to have a bit of a listen and a bit of a chuckle about. The National Broadband Network rollback would cost around $1.8 billion if the government to win power, should they do so, decide to roll it back.
That's based on the cost of buying out contracts that have been taken up. Yeah.
Yeah. So the federal government has revealed that taxpayers will be liable for at least $1.8 billion. Billion dollars. Did I say billion or million before? I can't remember. Billion.
I think you said billion.
1.8 billion, as Dr. Evil would say.
Billion.
Now, that's a lot of dollars, really, wouldn't you? And you think about the benefit that it would give, but
But they won't. They'll do something stupid like changing the name of something. Instead of calling it NBN, they'll call it National New Liberal Broadband Network, and that's all that'll happen. So this is much better, this one. You know, we've dressed this up, so it's not the NBN. We've completely got rid of the NBN. We've introduced this new thing, and this is much better. Glad we did this.
Yeah,
kept their election promise.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Look over here.
We had a budget last week. We got the next budget is the last budget before the next election, so that'll be sweetening everyone up.
Mm.
So we'll see what happens. But there's not a political show.
Mr. Turnbull came out and said that they probably wouldn't cancel the NBN contracts, though. They'd probably let the existing contracts go through to completion.
One would hope.
Well, that's what he came out and suggested. There was also news in the news. I'm trying to look it up to get my facts straight. But there was a story about the factory in Victoria, actually, that's making a lot of the cable for the NBN, the actual fibre factory.
Cool.
And the number of jobs that's creating and the amount of investment that's going into the factory in Victoria, somewhere not far from us, somewhere to the south of us, I believe.
Yeah,
I
saw that. Mr. Conway was spruiking that during the course of the week.
He was, yeah.
Fibre Factory is a good name for a band.
Fibre Factory.
Hmm.
As opposed to something like Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Yes.
I would have called it
me the nerd.
Why don't you call it? That, you could have called it your cult.
The thing that excites me about this factory being in Victoria is that once the NBN's rolled out, we're going to find that Australia has one of the most experienced, most best set up factories for churning out this fiber that could potentially be sold to countries all over the world doing similar rollouts of fiber broadband. It could be a really great thing for Australia to become a leader in that technology.
Yeah. Well, as we saw, they're going to 144-pair fiber down the street. And if you think of what you could get on one fiber optic, that's a lot of fibers.
Yeah, and one of the things that the detractors, they talk about fiber at the moment, the NBN plans that people are offering are only, 12 megabit per second or 50 megabit per second or even 100 megabit per second. But the fiber itself can carry massive amounts of data and even more than, if the technology changes, the fiber won't change. You just change the transceivers on either end and you can... The same fiber in the same street, now that it's laid, can carry,
And they're rolling out tons more than they need because, let's face it, you only need a little bit, and they're rolling out truckloads of it so that there's what we call plenty of dark fiber out there, that is fiber without any laser light going down it, and then they can just turn it on and add capacity as required.
Yep.
Good marketing. Good sense, if you ask me.
I mean, it really is, and it just baffles me the amount of stupidity in the comments that are out there. That are talking about the...
Don't read the comments.
The NBN. Mm.
As a general rule, read the article, don't read the comments.
No, don't even read the article in a lot of the current media outlets. They've got no clue whatsoever. Articles being written that are purporting to slam the NBN on the technical basis, and the Telstra's 4G network is faster than the NBN, written by the newspaper's social media commentator.
That reminds me, speaking of, Graham, you know how you took Apple to task about the naming of their iPad with 4G?
Oh, yes, this is fantastic.
That came out today. You want to tell?
Yes, Apple have changed the name of the of what was known as the iPad with Wi-Fi and 4G in Australia and quite a large number of other countries.
Because I got complaints, funnily enough.
Because, bowing to pressure from Graham Callaghan on Tech Talk Radio.
He wishes.
They have renamed it. It's now, if you go to the Apple Store online and you buy an iPad, you get offered the choice of the new iPad with Wi-Fi, or the new iPad with Wi-Fi plus cellular, which is a much better description. Because
accurate.
Sure, it does do 4G if you happen to be able to connect to a 4G network that it's compatible with, which is only a couple of networks in obscure little country called America.
Never heard of it.
Certainly doesn't connect to anything that's 4G in Australia, but it has a cellular capability of connecting to networks in Australia that run at very, very high speed through 3G and other networks that can even connect to old 2G networks. So it's a much better, more accurate description, Wi-Fi plus cellular. It doesn't upset people by using the name 4G when there is no 4G in Australia that's compatible with it. And it's a much it's a much better solution. So well done, Apple.
Congratulations, Graham. You stirred the pot early.
Bowing to the pressure. Yes, I did. I stirred the... yes, you heard it first on Tech Talk Radio.
You did, indeed.
We led the fight. I
read about it.
Oh, well.
It's cute. No, yeah. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah,
I feel a Les Mis moment coming on.
I can pretend. Yes, and of course the legal proceedings from the ACCC may have influenced them a little bit as well.
It could have. I think New Zealand and a few other Asian countries also cracked it over them. It was misleading.
Yeah, quite a number of countries.
I think there's some in Europe too, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Some of the EU got a bit
absolutely. Yep.
Narky about the whole thing.
Yep, so in quite a number of countries they've renamed that model so that it's much clearer what the situation is. And clarity and honesty, there's no reason why... I mean, it's a really good product. There's no reason why they need to use tactics that are... that are questionable because they have been questioned to sell it. It's a good product and stands on its own 2 feet under the name Wi-Fi Plus Cellular.
Says it all. OddSpot gadget, app, and website of the week. And I'm quite looking forward to the OddSpot this week. Normally, I don't look forward to them.
And normally, you
just
shy away.
Cringe,
yes,
know.
We approach the OddSpot with a great deal of trepidation most weeks.
What he pulls out of his little bag over there is...
I thought you were going to say something else.
Cringe-worthy. Cringe-worthy. We'll be back after this.
listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, ah!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
The HTC Flyer is a portable 7-inch Android tablet with a digital pen. It weighs just 420 grams. It supports Adobe Flash and HTML5 for video playback. It's got a front-facing and rear-facing camera, 3G and Wi-Fi connectivity, supports Bluetooth 3.0 with A2DP for wireless stereo headsets. It's got stereo speakers powered by a 1.5 GHz processor. The HTC Flyer is available online. About $400. Prices vary widely. I found like you could save $100 or $200 just by shopping around a little bit.
Cool.
So if you want a Android tablet.
I like tablets with pens. Does this one have a slot to put the pen away in?
Oh, Graham, I don't know. That's an excellent
question.
Otherwise,
you'd lose it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I wonder if they've thought of that. If you want to get more information, though, you can go to htc.com. Follow the links. Yeah, what's your one, Graham, with the pen?
Mine's a Lenovo ThinkPad tablet. That's and right. It does have a slot for the pen to go in. It's one of its best features is the pen and the slot that it stays in.
Cool. Cool. I thought we're getting away from pens and styluses, but they seem to be coming back a bit.
Oh, no. There's definitely a place for them.
Yeah.
Take note when you do editing, Dr. Ron.
Absolutely. That's our gadget, Andrew, the HTC Flyer.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Thank you, Freak, for this week's contribution. Pipple.com, P-I-P-L.com. If you remember the correspondence at the start of this week's program, Freak said he'd been going to websites and deleting old profiles that weren't used anymore. This is what it calls a comprehensive people search engine. You simply enter a name and or an email address and or a location, and you can find all there is available about a particular person on the internet.
Ooh.
We dive into the deep web, says Pipple, to bring you results you won't find in any other search engine. We then use powerful identity resolution to link seemingly disparate results into a set of meaningful profiles.
Has it got GPP?
You need to punch your name in and have a look. Lots of photos come up.
But has it got GPP?
Genuine people personality.
Correct.
Sounds ghastly.
Yeah.
That's our website, Andrew.
Oh, sorry.
Pipple, P-I-P-L.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Thank you, Max and Amy's mum, on Twitter for this week's suggestion, Flexi Schools for iPhone and iPad. You said you've used this, Andrew.
The web-based thing, I think we have, or similar sort of thing. This is for ordering kids' lunches online.
It is. If you've ever sent your kids off to school and realised with absolute horror
that you forgot their lunch.
You forgot to pack their lunch. Or happens. They forgot to grab their lunchbox on the way out the door.
It happens.
What will your children eat?
That's not that. It's what will the teachers think. Get it right, Dr. Ron.
Is that what it is? So they're not likely to die of starvation.
No, they forget about food anyway.
Okay. Well, you can worry no more. Flexi Schools, it says, is Australia's leading provider of online ordering, card systems and payment solutions for schools. The Canteen Online Ordering app means you can fire up the simple application on your iPhone or your iPad, select your school, select your child, select the lunch option, then pay online. Flexi Schools services over 350 Australian schools, removes lunch bags, lunch boxes, cash handling, and improves order accuracy. I thought it was a great idea.
It is good.
For more information and to download the app, you can go to flexischools.com.au.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
The one you've been waiting for, Andrew.
I love this.
Marvel Studios' The Avengers opened on the 4th of May and set a new record for opening weekend box office sales, grossing over $200 million in less than 3 days.
And off it goes.
But a firm that assesses damages for insurance companies says that if the Avengers superheroes took their battle to the streets of New York IRL...
I tweeted this.
...in real life, the damage bill would be as high as $70 billion.
Ouch.
Kinetic Analysis Corporation assessed the economic impact and costs associated with cleaning up the Avengers mess.
See, Tony Stark?
Now, hang on a minute. That's unfair. It wasn't their mess. It was made by the alien thingo creatures. That
spoilers. Have to pay spoilers. For
it. It's Loki's fault. And
spoilers.
It would have been...
Spoilers.
It wasn't a spoiler. It would have been even worse if Captain America... wasn't so awesome and kept all the damage, tried to keep all the damage within a 3-block radius.
That's true, yes.
Mm.
With the economic impact approximating $90 billion in expenses, the total cost of the melee for insurance companies, businesses and the city of New York could be as high as $160 billion.
But the icing on the cake there, insurance companies wouldn't have to pay it because technically it's an act of God because Thor and Loki are involved.
Because
they're gods. They're demigods.
It's another Brian explosion. That's the odd spot, Andrew.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Ron. That's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget you can join us same time next week on the station that you're listening to us now or on the podcast, and make sure you abide by all the legalities of the podcast, which you will hear when you download it this
which
week.
Which you will have heard if you've already downloaded it.
Correct.
This week.
Now, just before we go, for those of you who have been keen followers of Tech Talk Radio over the past few years, we've been going for 8 years now, we've ventured into the foray of television recently. Now, you may or may not have been aware of this with tweets and things that have been going on, but we have a preview coming up very shortly, which you'll be able to do in your own house in your own spot very soon. So watch this space next week. We'll give you a URL. Not to be tweeted, not to be Facebook, not to be anything.
It's just for our valued listeners. We'll
just
tell
for,
you
just for you guys,
an
our listeners. We'll tell you an address and we want your input. We want, yeah, it's good, it's bad, it's awful, great, da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, more next week. It's exciting times.
It is exciting times.
Until then.
In the meantime, send us your feedback, at techtalkradio.com.au.
Yep. Thanks, Graham. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.